One of the most amazing lines in Chazal appear in two places in Masechet Avodah Zarah, a very famous idea, namely that in the story of Eliezer ben Dardai, who was a famous chote, he was a famous sinner, and what the Chazal describes are things that people would normally not speak about in polite company of what he had done in his life. And finally, in the midst of a moment of debauchery, he had an epiphany, and he did tshuva, and he died in that state of tshuva. And Chazal tell us, Yesh kono olamo b'sha'achas. There are those people who acquire olamo, the world to come, or his world, b'sha'achas. I always found that to be an amazing idea. The truth is, we do paskim like that, in the sense that the person, even at the end of his life, can do tshuva, as long as he had a sincere tshuva me'ava. And the flip side is also true. The Gemara says in the Rambam Paskins in Perek Gimel, in Hilchos Tshuva, the person who's toa al harishono, the person that regrets even a life of tzidkus, but at the end of his life he has regrets, we paskin that person, every good thing he's done has been wiped out by what happens at the end of his life. And there's something truly profound and somewhat perplexing about that concept of being kono lama b'sha'achas. Everything goes out the window and we just follow perhaps what's happened in the last 5-10 minutes of a person's life. And this line that the Mefarshim discuss and they question, and there's a debate about this topic. Some of the Baalei Chassidus, the Maggid Mizrich, and others, they can't believe just the pashtus of that statement, the simple meaning of that statement, and therefore they interpret the Gemara somewhat differently. But I want to suggest something, just b'derech d'rosh, how I personally connect to and relate to this concept of Yesh Kona Olamo B'Sha'achas. I've had the opportunity recently to read an amazing book that has that's now a fixture in the New York Times bestseller list called The Power of Habit. I'm sure it's something that many people themselves have read or looked at. And one of the main characters in this book of The Power of Habit, which discusses the habit loop and the habits we get into and changing those habits and to some degree rewiring the behavioral patterns, someone by the name of Lisa Allen. Lisa Allen described her life of being one in which she was grossly overweight. She had been smoking for 20 years, drinking for 20 years. She had just recently been fired in a job or lost a job. Her credit cards were maxed out. Her husband had left the marriage and now was with living with a co-worker. She was just in an absolutely desperate state. And she decided that she could find one credit card that still had some money left on it or still had a line of credit. So she had always wanted to see the pyramids. She got on a plane. She flew to Cairo. And she spoke about how her life was so desperate. In the middle of the night, she heard the sound coming from a mosque. She woke up. She pulled out a cigarette. She lit the cigarette. And instead, she smelled some like burning plastic. And it turned out that she had lit a pen instead of a cigarette. And she thought to herself, disdainfully, I can't even smoke right. I can't even do that. She woke up the next morning. She took a taxi to the pyramids. And she said in this moment of just absolute craziness and desperation, as she's standing by the pyramids, she said, I need something. I need a goal. And she looked at the desert behind the pyramids. She said, I'm going to come back here a year later. I'm going to hike across this desert. The desert, she didn't know the name of it. She didn't know how big it was. She didn't know anything, but she said, I need this goal. And she said that if she's going to go ahead and do anything like that, she needs to stop smoking. 4 years later, she was a subject of a research paper in Bethesda about the brain and habits. And in front of the researcher sat a woman who was toned. She had run several marathons. She had lost 60 pounds. She was finishing her master's. She had a good job for the last 2 years. She was in a serious relationship. They couldn't believe that the picture of the woman 4 years ago was the same woman. And she said, every single thing about my life changed because I decided to stop smoking. When I felt the crave to smoke, I used to jog instead. Once I was jogging, I began to eat better. Once I began to eat better, I became more conscious about budgeting money. Once I was budgeting money, my life was more together. I started dressing better. I became more disciplined. Every single thing changed in her life just based on that decision to stop smoking. I saw an article recently by Yonatan Rosenblum, one of my favorite authors who writes for Mishpacha and other periodicals. Spoke in a recent column about a conversation that he had had with his personal trainer in Yerushalayim. And this personal trainer, of course, is a very disciplined person, gets up early in the morning to learn, and then is very fit. So obviously he's a very disciplined person. And the personal trainer told Yonatan Rosenblum a year ago that he'd been listening to the radio, he heard some mention of Princess Diana, and he thought to himself, you know, my wife is a real princess. She's a real Bas Melech. She's a great wife and a great mother and a generous person. And he asked himself, if my wife really is a princess, how can I go into the home and ever speak critically or harshly? And this person had always been a good husband, but he realized that if his wife really was that person, there was no room for negativity and no room for tension from his end expressed towards her. So he made a commitment a year ago that no harsh words or critical words would leave his lips in the direction of his wife or about his wife. And speaking about that decision, he told Yonatan Rosenblum that he'd always had a good marriage, but how his life was absolutely transformed because of that commitment of not speaking harshly or critically. He said once he started doing that, then he wanted to make sure that he was doing actions that were always positive. So he would make sure that before he went to bed, that the kitchen was clean and the dishes were washed. On evenings that his wife was out late, to make sure there was a dinner prepared for her when she came home. It ended up meaning that the kids were more respectful to the mother. The kids spoke more kindly to each other. The home became a place of even further simcha and love. When this gentleman lost money in an investment on Teva Pharmaceuticals, his wife didn't say a word about it because she was feeling herself that her needs were very much met emotionally in the relationship. They went on vacation for the first time, and this trainer described to Yonatan Rosenblum that these were the best 4 days of his life when they went to Prague together. And all of that is because of a decision of speaking in a certain type of way, not being harsh, not being critical. That decision that effectuated an absolute, complete change in his life. Now that, at least b'derech d'rush, perhaps what the Gemara means of yesh kona olamo b'sha'a achas, that in a moment a person's olam, a person's life, is transformed, not through the grand gesture and not through the proclamations that are unreasonable, but recognizing that there is a host of areas that allow us meaningful change. For instance, if a person made a decision that they're going to be a minion and that they're going to have their tefillin on before davening and be really ready to daven. Now, how would that change the day? How would that change the spirit of calm, the God-centeredness that a person experiences because of that decision of being a minion 10 minutes early, and feeling the nachas ruach that comes from that type of tefillah? that is a shah achas, a decision whose hashlachot, whose outgrowth affects an entire life. How about a decision to not criticize anybody in one's life for at least a week, so that criticism is not coming from a place of hurt or a place of smallness or a place of annoyance? And maybe a week later, there's no need to even mention what the criticism is. How much would that change our life and our relationships? How much would our life and relationships change if we made a commitment to not have our phones with us for an hour or so during the evening, during dinner time? How about by exercising some? How about a person makes the commitment to learn bikvius 10, 15 minutes every day and make a seed at the end of the year based on that learning? These are the sha'os, the singular sha'os that affect and transform the tapestry and fabric of a person's life. I mentioned to you a story that I just heard recently from a woman in our shul. The woman's name is Yocheved. Yocheved's mother, Laura, just passed away about 5-6 weeks ago at the age of almost 101 years old. Yocheved told me something beautiful about her mother, that when she turned 100, all the children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, they asked her, what do you want to do for your 100th birthday? And she said, I want to go on a cruise. So they went on a whole cruise to Nova Scotia, and there's something so beautiful about that, that a person of that age is so connected and so vibrant. But let me tell you how Laura even got on that cruise in the first place. Laura grew up in Budapest from a very, very chashuv family, and her father was the shochet, this Yocheved's grandfather. Her mother was a real pillar, spiritual pillar, in the community. And this was before the war. And her mother took in a Gentile woman in Budapest to help her. This lady was out of work and she needed some money. So Yocheved's grandmother said, you know, come help, you know, come work for me, and you know, pay you some money. And this lady would come, and Yocheved's grandmother baked challahs for the entire neighborhood for various reasons. And every Friday, this Gentile woman would help Yocheved's grandmother bake the challahs. And every Friday, Yocheved's grandmother would give her the nicest of all the challahs that were made. And Laura, Yocheved's mother, used to question her, you know, you have to give her the nicest challah? And Yocheved's grandmother said, no, that's just the way you treat people. Just the way that someone comes to work for you. So you make them feel special. You give them the nicest and the choicest, and you treat them like family, if not better. When the war came, this Gentile lady came to Yocheved's grandmother and said, I'm going to live in the country with my son. I'm not going to need my papers. You take my papers, save one of your children, and make sure that your child is safe. Yocheved's grandmother gave the papers to Yocheved's mother, Laura. Laura spent the entire war working with these papers under the false name in a restaurant in Budapest. She came to Eretz Yisrael. She got married. 3 children, 8 children, 29 great-grandchildren later. That's the legacy of the grandmother giving the most beautiful challah to this woman. An entire family survived. All of the progeny existed, all as an outgrowth of the Shah Achas, of the singular moment, single decision of a woman to be generous and to give the best challah to a Gentile woman. Kaini Hiratzon, that in our life, we have that same sensibility. And perhaps that's what the Gemara means when it says that Shinui Hashem, changing one's name, and perhaps Shinui Makom, is Mikarin Sadin, tears up God's judgment. Just to change a seat, just to change one's name. But the point being is that the recognition that it's not just changing a seat. person who wants to do tshuva recognizes that process of tshuva is spurred on by just a change of seat, a change of schedule, change of focus, change of amidah, and it's that decision, it's that change that can often transform one's entire existence. Can you hear us on that this is a year where we can meaningfully together and see the full effect, the full power of what it means to return and to do tshuva, to transform and to grow. Thank you.